This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Culture and Society. We shall close with the news for young people. I am John Baptist Tumusime. On Thursday, Pope Francis received an audience, bishops, seminarians, and formators of the Spanish ecclesiastical province of Valencia. The area was seriously affected by heavy rains that caused severe floods in October last year, which killed more than 230 people and damaged a lot of property. In his address, the Pope recalled the suffering the survivors went through and noted that priests should be shaped by people's pain. Devin Watkins has the details.
La danna non è un fenomeno atipico.
The storm was not just an atypical phenomenon that we merely hope will not happen again, Pope Francis told the seminarians, formators, and bishops of Valencia. It is the extrapolation of what every human being experiences when faced with loss, feeling alone, displaced, and in need of support to move forward. The Pope said the role of priests is to bind up the brokenhearted and provide spiritual support for people amid the large and small disasters of daily life. Yours is a pain and mourning that, despite its harshness, opens us to hope for enforcing us to reach rock bottom and leave everything behind that seems to sustain us. It allows us to go beyond. People cannot be left alone to face the darkness, urged the Pope. Rather, he said, the work of so many volunteers and the Catholic Church after the storm were expressions of God's tenderness. Pope Francis pointed out that hope is not optimism, which is merely a superficial attitude, while hope calls us to move beyond empty phrases in search of deeper meaning. Our hope, he said, has a name, Jesus, God, who was not disgusted by our clay and who, instead of saving us from the clay, became clay for us. Each priest, he added, is called to become an altar Christus, another Christ, by becoming clay in the weeping of the people. When you see broken people, he said, give them pieces, fragments of yourselves, just as Christ does in the Eucharist. In conclusion, Pope Francis invited the future priests of Valencia to give of themselves freely, just as they have received everything freely. I'm Devin Watkins.
Pope Francis has sent a message to members of the Congregation of Souls May on the occasion of the 150th anniversary of the death of their founder, Father Prosper Guérange, who was born on April 4, 1805, and died on January 30, 1875. The Souls May Congregation is an association of monasteries within the Benedictine Confederation headed by the Abbey of Souls May, whose current abbot is Father Geoffroy Kemlin. Father Guérange was a French priest and a Benedictine monk who served for nearly 40 years as the abbot of the monastery of Solesm, which he founded among the ruins of a former monastery at Solesm. Through the new monastery, he founded the French Congregation of Solesm, which re-established Benedictine monastic life in France after it had been wiped out by the French Revolution. In the message, Pope Francis recalled and also appreciated the contribution of Father Guérange to the development of the dogma of the Immaculate Conception and that of papal infallibility, and his devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Blessed Virgin Mary. He emphasized that his works contributed to the rediscovery that the liturgy is the language of the Church and the expression of its faith. The Holy Father invited the members of the Souls May congregation to be faithful to the charism of their founder and to learn from his example. The bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Jefferson City in the United States of America, the Right Reverend Sean Magnet, has concluded a tour of Kampala Archdiocese in Uganda, where he arrived at the weekend. His diocese has a special relationship with the Archdiocese of Kampala, which for some years now has been sending some of its priests to serve in some parishes in Jefferson, following a scarcity of vocations to the priesthood. The Diocese of Jefferson, in return, is funding education and other projects in Kampala Archdiocese. At the beginning of this week, Bishop Magnet visited a school in a place called Sentema, which is funded by his diocese, and delivered the following remarks.
It is so good to be with you all, especially with the children, the future of our church. God has blessed you with many children, and they are our responsibility to carry on the mission of the church. This is why a school is at the heart of a parish. It's at the center of our mission to hand on the faith to the next generation. We are one family of God. We have one faith that we share. We also have the same mission. And it is for that reason that all of us have been blessed with the exchange of gifts that my visit to you represents. It is good for me to hear of the involvement of the laity in the even the administration of this parish and all the projects.
Bishop Sean Magnet of Jefferson Catholic Diocese in the United States of America, who has just concluded a visit to Kampala Archdiocese in Uganda. The Catholic bishops of Malawi are scheduled to conclude their plenary assembly on Friday, January 31st. One of the top items on their agenda is the breakdown of marriages in the country. Research studies carried out in the last 4 years show that divorce and remarriage in Malawi have become common. The studies also show that between 28% and 49% of marriages in the country end in divorce before their 20th anniversary. The instability of marriage in Malawi, the Secretary General of the Malawi Catholic Bishops' Conference, Father Valerio Moseka, said, is of serious concern to the bishops because the family is the basic unit of society and of the church. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, on Wednesday announced the formal exit of Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger from the regional bloc following their withdrawal last year. A statement by the bloc said the withdrawal of the three countries led by military juntas takes effect on the same day, the 29th of January 2025. The three states announced their withdrawal from the 15-nation bloc last January after ECOWAS demanded a restoration of democratic rule in Niger following a military coup in 2023. Instead, the three breakaway states formed the Alliance of Sahel States, an alternate bloc, and launched their own biometric passports. ECOWAS, in its statement on Wednesday, said the remaining members tentatively agreed to keep ECOWAS doors open by recognizing national passports and identity bearing the logo of the bloc from the countries. They also agreed to continue trade and diplomatic cooperation with the three countries under existing regional agreements. Heads of state of the 8-member East African community have called for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. In a statement Wednesday, they also called on the government in Kinshasa to directly engage in talks with the M23 rebels who seized the city of Goma this week and other armed groups in the country. Meanwhile, French Foreign Minister Jean-Noël Barrot arrived in the DRC's capital Kinshasa on Thursday and could visit Rwanda afterwards, Congo's government press agency reported, quoting diplomatic sources. A spokesperson for the French Foreign Ministry said that Mr. Barrow's mission came after President Emmanuel Macron had spoken to his counterparts, DRC President Felix Tshisekedi and Rwanda's President Paul Kagame. The spokesperson added that the mission was aimed at supporting the ongoing Luanda and Nairobi mediation efforts. A nurse in Uganda has died of Ebola, a health official said on Thursday, in the first recorded fatality since the last outbreak ended in 2023. The 32-year-old male nurse was an employee of Mulango Hospital, the main referral facility in the capital, Kampala. The man died on Wednesday, and the Sudan strain of Ebola was confirmed following post-mortem tests, Diana Antwine, permanent secretary of the health ministry, told reporters on Thursday. The last outbreak of the viral hemorrhagic fever discovered in the East African country in September 2022 killed at least 55 people before it was declared over in January 2023. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
This is Culture and Society, and you are welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Capital punishment, which is also known as the death penalty, is the killing of a person authorized by the state as punishment for actual or supposed misconduct. The sentence ordering that an offender be punished in such a manner is known as a death sentence, and the act of carrying out the sentence is known as an execution. Capital punishment is controversial, with many people, organizations, and religious groups holding different views on whether it is ethically permissible. According to Amnesty International, the death penalty breaches human rights, specifically the right to life and the right to live free from torture or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. These rights are protected under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights adopted by the United Nations in 1948. There seems to be a growing awareness in Africa that the death penalty is a cruel and inhuman punishment, radically contrary to human dignity, which disproportionately affects the most disadvantaged and marginalized people in all societies. To that effect, the African continent has led the international community in the abolitionist train since 2000, with countries abolishing the death penalty for all crimes, such as Gabon in 2010, Republic of Congo and Madagascar in 2015, Chad in 2020, Sierra Leone in 2021, Central African Republic and Zambia in 2022, Burkina Faso and Equatorial Guinea abolished capital punishment for common crimes in 2018 and 2022 respectively, while Ghana ended the death penalty for all crimes except high treason in 2023. The latest country to announce the abolition of the death penalty on the African continent is Zimbabwe, effectively making it the 30th African nation to end capital punishment. The country's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, on 31st December 2024, approved a law that abolishes the death penalty in the Southern African state with immediate effect. Several human rights groups, including the Catholic Church in Zimbabwe, have welcomed the move by the Mnangagwa government to abolish the death penalty. Father Travis Moyo is the General Secretary of the Conference of Catholic Bishops of Zimbabwe. In an interview with Vatican Radio's Kelsey Gusi recently, Father Moyo said that a change in the understanding of the concept of justice in the country has helped Zimbabwe make this a special and positive leap in the right direction.
On the 31st of December, the country enacted a law abolishing the death penalty in the country. And this has been long in waiting, given that even though we had a law that permitted the state to take a life, the last person to be executed using the death penalty was in 2005. So we went for a very long period, almost 20 years. And this is largely because of the shift in terms of the understanding of the concept of justice and also the society getting an appreciation of what is happening in other countries to say there are many ways of punishment, but maybe the sanctity of life has to be preserved. And I think that's what it means for the people in the country to say we are getting a better appreciation of the sanctity of life and the system of justice as a country.
And you kind of touched on it briefly a little bit already, but it took so long, almost 20 years, as you said, to actually have this act passed. What do you think maybe was the reason behind almost taking 20 years?
I wouldn't be certain in terms of why, but I will say so many factors came together. We are signatories of the international community on things like human rights. As a country, we define ourselves as a Christian country. And so all these values somehow colluded when people then were beginning to think in terms of, do we really need the death penalty? And also that the president himself was once a victim of such a punitive punishment, from his own experience, he would have been more sympathetic towards the abolishment of that act.
And speaking of the fact that Zimbabwe is a Christian country, I was looking to see if the bishops had commented on this act being passed. Do you know if they've said anything or if they've released a statement?
They didn't go publicly to say, yes, this is it. But there is a consensus, a certain understanding. They have written to the parliament congratulating it for passing such a law. They have written to the Speaker of Parliament and to the Minister of Justice encouraging such a way of looking at justice issues. They didn't issue a statement particularly on this, but they have been at the front lobbying and also speaking about the sanctity of life and the preservation of this great gift from God. Lastly, maybe that they didn't issue a statement was because, as you'll understand, we had the act enacted on the 31st of December, and that's more or less holiday in time for most people. And we have just come back to business.
What do you think the impact of this act being passed will have on other African nations specifically?
I think it's fair to say our countries tend to copy from each other and to learn from each other. If anything, Zimbabwe at the present moment is the head or the chair of the SADC community, the Southern African Development Community. So I think it's leading by example to say, yes, we can do it. And other countries also reflecting on this. And remember, with the death penalty, there were also mistakes being made. We have innocent people who were killed just because at that given time, they were seen to have been on the wrong side of the law. But once a decision has been taken of that nature, you couldn't reverse it. And I think some people also come to a consciousness and an understanding of saying, and maybe that's not the way of treating citizens. Let's preserve life at all costs and find ways of rehabilitating those who have committed crimes. I think that's a positive statement. That's a statement on human rights. That's a statement also on the many commitments that governments sign to.
Actually, hearing you speak about it, it's very true, like you're saying, living by example and seeing the development of, a greater knowledge, not just for Zimbabwe, but for all of us. I mean, in the States,
yeah.
I'm from the States, and we still have the death penalty. So what would you say are maybe the challenges to other countries in terms of following Zimbabwe in abolishing the death penalty? Obviously, it's different for every country, but what would you think are some of the challenges?
I think the biggest challenge is in our understanding of justice and how we perceive the correctional institutions. In most countries, if you have committed a crime, it's almost an equivalent of you must suffer. There's no element of rehabilitation. And yet rehabilitation gives citizens a second chance so that they can see they are wrong and learn from it. And I think, I don't want to say, most countries are still is thinking that the punitive way of dealing with offenders is the only way. And it was like that even for Zimbabwe for a long time. It takes time. It takes a bit of education around human rights, around the sanctity of life, the human dignity. It's those things that I think are a challenge in most countries.
Do you think this has an impact, or how would you say there's an impact on everyday life for people that might not have anyone on death row, but for the society, for your diocese, for your parish, is there an impact you could see from the abolition of the death penalty?
Yes, it does have an impact, and it does challenge the communities, because not all people are agreed that we should abolish the death penalty for two reasons. If they have been victims of malicious crimes and they know the perpetrators, the immediate reaction is that they must also suffer the same consequences. And so you will find pockets in our communities of people who think that way. And then you will also find people who see progression in terms of how the long way we have traveled from 2005. Because it also traumatizes those who execute others. Even I'm told even in the country when we had this law operational, we had difficulty finding the hangman. So maybe that also accounts for the many lives that we spared during the period between 2005 to 2025. So yes, we will get mixed feelings, and I think it takes a lot of education to try and get people on board and to understand that justice has many facets, and one of them is to say there is correctional justice, so we can rehabilitate people, and let's leave it to God to decide on human life.
General Secretary of the Conference of Catholic Bishops of Zimbabwe, Father Travis Moyo, speaking to Vatican Radio's Keo Sigusi. And that is all we have time for today in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanya Ntagodifri Kampamba.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. A press conference was held at the Holy See Press Office on Tuesday morning to present the first ever World Summit on the Rights of Children. The summit is promoted by Pope Francis and coordinated by the Pontifical Committee for World Children's Day, headed by Capuchin Father Enzo Fortunato. The 3rd February meeting will take place in the Vatican's Apostolic Palace on the theme, Love Them and Protect Them. The Holy Father is scheduled to open the event by welcoming 10 children from various countries who are due to share a message with the Pope. 7 panels will be held, each with a specific topic focusing on the rights of children, including access to education, rights to a family, protection from violence, and access to resources. In November, the Pope announced that he will dedicate a day to helping and protecting millions of children who are still without rights, who live in precarious conditions, who are exploited and abused, and who suffer the dramatic consequences of war. Speaking at Tuesday's press conference, Marco Impagliazzo, president of the community of Sant'Egidio, described the upcoming meeting as an event of hope. He said, too many children die from war, violence, sexual and labor exploitation, and that the Pope wants to bring a smile to these suffering children. Among the experts and leaders expected at the upcoming meeting are Queen Rania Al-Abdallah of Jordan, Kailash Satyarthi, an Indian-born Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and former U.S. Vice President Al Gore. A video testimony of the Satyarthi Movement for Global Compassion was screened during the press conference on Tuesday. The movement was born out of 4 decades of work on the rights of children by Mr. Satyarthi. In 2021, Mr. Satyarthi was appointed to serve as one of 4 UN Sustainable Development Goals advocates. He spoke to UN News' Anshu Sharma in New Delhi at the time about how his fight for child rights started.
What inspired you to fight for against child labor? What was that one moment when you said, okay, I have to do this?
One was when I was 5 years old and went to school for the first time. I saw a boy my age sitting outside the school gate. He was a cobbler boy. I asked this question to my teacher that why all of us are sitting in classroom and a boy is sitting outside? And he tried to calm me down and said that this is very common, poor children have to help the families, and so on. And that was a shock for me. I could not believe, because I was a small child. But that had given me a new perspective of life, that whatever the people say may not be correct. That cannot be justified, because these are age-old answers. And I started trying to find answer. So that spark grew gradually. And I made up my mind that I have to do something, but I didn't know how to do and what to do, because nobody was working, no NGO, no individual was working on this issue. And in fact, the child labor, child slavery were non-issues in the society. So I gave up my career and started a journal which was totally dedicated for the marginalized children and women and other poor sections of society. So my second story began when a desperate father knocked on my door. He told that he and his newly married wife, along with many more people, were lured away, or trafficked in modern language, to work at a brick kiln where all the children in all those families were born and grew up, including his 15-year-old daughter, Sabo. And Sabo was about to be sold to a brothel. So he ran away from there somehow in desperation and reached to me. I decided to go to rescue her and the family and other families, but it was not an easy task. We went there, we were beaten up, we had to come barefooted, empty hands, but not with empty heart. So I decided to go to some friends and we went to the High Court and filed a habeas corpus petition. We succeeded and we were able to rescue 36 children, women and men. And that is the first documented incident of freeing child slaves through some civilian efforts anywhere in the contemporary world. That has given me the path, very clear path, that this is my life and I am going to end child slavery in my lifetime.
Indian human rights activist and Nobel Peace Laureate Kailash Satyarthi. And that's all for this edition of News for Young People. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
You have been listening to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program, at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Development and the Economy. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.